Texas Talking Owl.
What was that you said?
Texas Talking Owl.
Gonna hoop upside your head.
Texas Talking.
Welcome to the Tribcast. I'm John Heilman from New York Magazine, and Evan, stop. Evan, stop. Take your hands off me. Evan, unhand me. The host is Reeve Hamilton. He's awesome.
Thank you. This is reporter Reeve Hamilton here with the Tribcast for the third week of November. Joining me, fresh off of John Heilman's leg, is editor-in-chief and CEO, Evan Smith.
Man, you just pack your things right this minute. Get out.
That really was revolting.
I'll have Ralph Harwitz in here in 5 seconds if
I
you don't stop
up.
It.
Executive editor Ross Ramsey.
Howdy.
And editor Emily Ramshaw.
Hello.
Thank you for joining us, everyone.
We're happy to be here, sort of.
Are you?
sort of.
After listening to that intro, I sort of want to go vomit in the bathroom.
Well, you have to wait 30 minutes, and then
vomit
you can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
If you are like me, and I'm sure the three of you are, then you woke up on Saturday very excited about the announcement that was coming from State Senator Leticia Vanderpute about her
Saturday
future plans.
What Saturday are you referring to?
This past Saturday.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm going to announce an announcement.
But then,
this is the way that it happens now.
But
it
then
gets
I
a
was
headline,
down.
It keeps working.
Right. So, but, I mean, she did.
It's like standby for news on
right.
Twitter.
So,
right.
Yeah. So everyone's expecting her to run for lieutenant governor. She announced that she was going to make a big announcement on Saturday, and then her big announcement on Saturday is that she's going to make an announcement later this week. Is that not the most annoying thing that anyone has ever done?
Anyone has ever done, including the way you've handled the beginning of this podcast? No.
Anyone other than Wendy Davis, who also did this exact same thing.
They all do this.
This is the strategery.
It works. I'm exploring a possibility of thinking about running for president.
She gets another news cycle out of it.
Right.
Does it work?
Yeah, you keep the bubble going. You keep the Twitter going. You keep, you know, I mean, yeah. We've been talking about it for a week.
Everybody, it's not as if people don't know what she's going to do.
Right. And we've managed to kill a few minutes of it here on the podcast, so I guess it does work in that regard. So what do you think what does her getting into the lieutenant governor's race do?
The double woman at the top of the ticket. I mean, I think you may see the Texas Tribune writing about this in the coming days, potentially in the pages of the New York Times, but I do think, you know—
Spoiler alert.
Yeah,
whoa.
I know. Well, I would like to say it's a preview, not a spoiler.
It's going to be one of those Amon Bethedia plagiarism deals.
She's announcing she's announcing.
I'm announcing, exactly. This is what these Texas women do. They announce their announcements.
You should explain the plagiarism crack so that people know what you're talking about.
Yes,
the best comment of all time, or a contender anyway, on the Texas Tribune site was somebody pointed out that Amon Bethedia's Texas Tribune story on Monday morning was lifted word for word, apparently, from the New York Times under a story written by one Amon Bethedia of the Texas Tribune.
He really does get the good comments, doesn't
well,
he?
And
does.
Who are these people who just never read the byline and assume? They can tell that it's word for word.
Everybody who's not our mothers. Only mothers
read
bylines.
He lifted that, too. You know, his name
is... byline.
Yeah.
He plagiarized his own byline.
Right.
The commenter actually misspelled his name. A-A-M-A-N. So maybe he was confused. Amon Bethedia.
Let's get back to Leticia.
Listen, she this is a good thing for the Democrats in that it has been a very long time, 20 years, since the Democrats have had this kind of competitive environment. Wendy Davis and Leticia Vanderpute together represent the most competitive ticket, I would even say more than Tony Sanchez and John Sharp, Ross.
I beg to differ.
Why?
Three or four tickets. I mean, they say this every year.
Which
it's like
tickets?
We finally have the mayor of Houston running with
$22 million. Chris Bell and Ben Head or whoever it was not a competitive.
No, I'm just talking, you know, we finally have Bill White running with $22, $25 million.
Who'd he
run with?
We
finally have Tony Sanchez running with $75 million.
Have there ever been two women at the top of the ticket before in Texas?
No, and it's always a name and an also-ran. Come on. Tony Sanchez
It's going to be a name and an also-ran this time.
No, it isn't.
Okay.
Well, but why is it going
to
be?
Agree to disagree.
How is it a name and an also-ran?
I think the focus is going to be on the governor's race. Once we're out of March, the focus is going to be on the governor's race and the lieutenant governor's race is, that thing.
Except that they can campaign together probably in a way that others haven't.
It nationalizes the election even further. It's the year that women are getting messed with. I'm not saying it's going to be successful. There are millions of reasons why ultimately we know the ending of this movie before we see it. But it plays into a larger narrative.
I don't disagree that it's a big story. I just disagree that it's the only competitive ticket since 1994.
Truly competitive, number one and number two.
No. John Cornyn's polls on the Sunday before he beat Ron Kirk had him 3 points ahead. That was a competitive race.
Who did the poll? The same people that did the Dewhurst poll?
Well, I'm just saying
race?
It was a competitive race. It was a competitive race all up and down the ballot.
I would argue. I'm with Ross.
Ron Kirk
is not
got
the
42%.
Most competitive race. But I do think this is clearly the most interesting race in a really long time.
I think you guys are talking
about
yourself.
About 4 years, I think.
I think you guys are talking yourselves out of what is a momentous electoral cycle compared to the last two decades.
Well, I'm reluctant after 20 years of Democratic hype to buy it.
But I'm not buying the hype because I'm not buying the hype because I have believed and say publicly and will say again,
right.
They're going to lose.
This is the guy who thought the water proposition wasn't going to pass.
This is homemade
for
hype.
For context.
Look, LVP stands also for likely voter problem. Democrats have a big problem, no matter who the candidates are on the ticket, in turning out people who don't normally turn out, likely voter Democratic.
So my favorite stat of the moment is they got 2.4 million people to vote in the Democratic primary when Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton were battling in Texas. And they've never topped 700 since. So they've got at least 1.7 million people who vote in Democratic primaries stuck on the couch.
Vandepuy is going to be important because of her gender. Vandepuy's also going to be important because of her ethnicity.
Right.
And I think she ends up spending most of the next year south of I-10 attempting to turn out Hispanics in places like San Antonio, Laredo, the Valley, Houston, out to El Paso, where the Hispanic community has not turned out as a percentage of its eligible vote anything like what the Anglos have turned out. And the only way Democrats can hope to come back is that they leverage some of that unrealized opportunity.
This was the pre-election analysis of Linda Chavez Thompson.
Right. She was going to turn out Hispanics.
Everything south of,
she's a woman.
South of San Antonio, female, labor leader.
I think you and I differ about the degree to which Linda Chavez Thompson is not Leticia Vandepuy.
I think you both agree that she's not the same person.
She's definitely not the same person. However, I think, you know, what you're hearing the pollsters say is that for Democrats to even have a shot, they have to make inroads with Latinos and they have to pick off some of the suburban woman vote. I think having two women at the top of the ticket absolutely helps that. And I think the fact that one of them is a Hispanic helps on the other side.
This year
doesn't mean they win.
Senator Vandepuy's role in Wendy Davis's filibuster, which created her own sort of like media storm.
You're going to have that clip of her saying, "What does a woman have to do to have her voice be heard?" I'm paraphrasing, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to see that clip over and over for the next 12 months. That will be a campaign.
Does that sort of intensify the microscope on the whole abortion issue?
Well,
the Republicans will intensify.
I don't think the Letitia thing does. I think the Letitia thing is the road out of just the abortion issue. I think that if the Republicans win the framing on this, then that whole discussion was about abortion.
Not like Cecile Richards as Wendy Davis.
If the Democrats win the framing on this, it was about women's health and it was about women in general. And Letitia's comments and role in that is the way out of the sort of the
although
whole,
I do think the inelegantly described by me get out of my vagina vote in the suburbs. Is going to be an important part of this coalition if it's to come together.
Except we
do agree that was inelegant.
Okay, we agree on one thing.
Except
the suburban women who might not otherwise be inclined to vote Democratic, there may be some of that, the kind of split ticket households, you know, where the women say, you know what, the husbands vote conservative, reliably Republican, but the women go, you know what, they've just been messing with women's health, governor vetoes the equal pay legislation, whole host of women's issues. We don't think women are getting a fair shake. I'm going to vote for the women just because.
You know, I really don't understand that particular demographic. I think because we hear from so few of them, these quote-unquote undecided Texas women or these quote-unquote undecided suburban female voters, I'm not really sold that they exist.
I'm not either. I don't think they're there. I think that's.
Do you think the concept of the soccer mom is a fantasy or is it a relic of another era?
No, I think the concept of the soccer mom is right. I think the concept of a Republican deciding to vote for a Democrat on one issue is a real leap.
Wasn't the soccer mom sort of women who trended in one direction in previous elections willing to trend in a different election, a different way in a different election?
Yeah, but that was a national story and not a Texas story. I don't think Texas Republicans have seen, let's put it this way, let's make it historical. Texas Republicans haven't yet seen a Democrat that they were going to jump over and support. You know, first you have to decide, I'm not going to support the Republican. And you have to ask yourself, does Greg Abbott have enough flies on him for them to do that?
Well, the biggest problem with that argument is that Greg Abbott is not enough of a disincentive for them to vote Republican.
They've got to leave the Republicans and then go from neutral, which is the first position after leaving, to Democrat. And that's a couple of big leaps.
Right. I think it's a huge leap.
What about Vandepuy's strong ties to the military? Does that I mean, that's sort of
she chairs the Veterans Affairs and Military Installations Committee in the Senate. She does have a represents a district that is heavy military.
But couldn't you imagine that being more of an issue than this other stuff we've talked about as something that might sway somebody?
I mean, I would say that for the general, you know, they steer clear of a lot of the abortion issues, really focus on Leticia's military background and really play up Wendy Davis as, you know, more of a moderate, which she really was in Fort Worth.
The issue for Vandepute is going to be, do you get enough fuel here, money, to tell people who you are and what you're about? She's certainly got the bona fides to talk about veterans issues and those kinds of things, but nobody knows that. You have to have the ability to – you have to get voters to say Leticia Vandepute and veterans, and that takes resources.
And how much do they campaign together as a ticket versus campaigning, you know, separately around the state?
I think the analogy here may be to Clinton and Gore. Remember the whole Huck and Tom idea? Historically, when you were the nominee of the party, you would look – to mitigate your weaknesses by bringing in somebody who was geographically different or ethnically or in terms of gender different. And what Clinton did was basically embrace somebody who was similar. Now, Davis and Vandepute are not perfectly similar, but it is more of a same-same ticket. And I think that's pretty interesting. Wendy Davis didn't say, I've got to go find a former Republican turned Democrat or a conservative Democrat who's personally pro-life to mitigate the fact that they're going to try to make this into Greg Abbott versus the abortionist. She said, we're going to put all of our chips on this square, and we're going to see if we can't run with it. Now, the interesting question, I think, unresolved. So we now know who three of the party's nominees are going to be, Republican for governor, Democrat for governor, Democrat for lieutenant governor. Right. Unresolved is the Republican for lieutenant governor. And I would submit to you that the outcome of that primary will have an impact on the degree to which there's opportunity, whether it's enough opportunity, for Vandepute.
Yeah, so go back to the thing we were talking about a minute ago. What is the Republican who would get a moderate Republican? Which of the lieutenant governor nominees would make a moderate Republican go, don't want to do that?
I could think of one.
Well, you know, potentially that's Dan Patrick. If you run to the right in that primary, who's least likely to run back to the middle in the general election, or who's least capable of running back to the middle in the general, and that's Dan Patrick.
Right.
You know, Dan Patrick is also willing to say, as the radio talk show host is apt to say, pretty much anything, and to be kind of out there with his strong principles. Well, you can be out there with your strong principles and inadvertently step on a landmine. And the person of the four who is perhaps most at risk of inadvertently stepping on a landmine may well be Senator Patrick. And certainly Senator Patrick would be the one who would have the hardest time running as a centrist if you felt like you had to in a general.
Well, even if he doesn't screw up, he's the sharpest contrast.
He is the sharpest contrast.
Right. And, you know, he's the, you know, you can walk in and say, you know, you don't have the problem of walking in with George Bush and Al Gore when everybody said, you know, it's the same guy in both parties. You know, it's basically there's no difference between these guys. There's differences. You know, you've got Abbott and Davis. That's a pretty sharp difference. You've got, you know, potentially Vandepute and Patrick, that's a very sharp difference. If it's Vandepute and Dewhurst, then I still think there's a chance Dewhurst wins that without a runoff. I think it's a narrow chance, but I think there's a chance.
You mean Vandepute and Dewhurst, well, when would he win without a runoff? You mean
in the primary.
You still think there's a possibility that Dewhurst just puts this away?
Yeah. Are there any issues on which Vandepute and Davis differ in any kind of stark way? I mean, it would be interesting to go back and look at their records and see if there's anything.
I knew a news organization that had the ability to deploy resources to find that out.
So is that a spoiler alert too?
I don't know. You're going to have to wait and see. I'll let you know about that next weekend for the following week.
We'll have an announcement of that.
Right.
Is it beneficial or bad for the Democrats that they're basically running more or less one person per slot? So, I mean, you said that one of the things Vandepute has to do is get people to know that she has this military record, for example. How do you do that if you have no one to compare yourself to?
On the other hand, I'm not sure that Bill White benefited from having to dispense with Farouk Shami. I mean, I don't know that
competition.
God,
that was fantastic.
But if you look at Lieutenant
Governor, all benefited from that.
She doesn't have to waste any of her money trying to defeat somebody in a primary, so that's clearly beneficial. I mean, while the other folks running for Lieutenant Governor are spending cash trying to, you know, get out of a runoff, potentially – she doesn't have to deal with that at all. So financially, it's a boon. But the problem is financially, the Democrats are facing, you know, a tough road anyway.
Yeah. You know, together, the Republicans are going to burn $25 to $30 million in their primary.
In the primary, right.
In the lieutenant governor primary. And she doesn't have to do that. The Democrats up and down the ballot, for the most part, get all of this time to raise money and to point over their shoulder saying, look at what the Republicans are doing and use that as a fundraising
tool.
Hasn't she also been a national figure within like Naleo and
well, she was co-chair of the Democratic Denver convention.
Right. You know, I want to come back to the idea that this election will be nationalized by virtue of Wendy Davis being on it, by virtue of a prominent Hispanic. One thing I heard the other day that I thought was fascinating is there are currently no Democratic Hispanic governors.
Right.
The only Democratic Hispanic senator is Bob Menendez. There are very few prominent Democratic Hispanic political figures nationally. Mayor Castro may get there on the merits, but he also gets there because he's one of the only prominent Latino right. Democratic Mayors. Figures. She becomes, by virtue of being the candidate in this race, a prominent figure so that the National Hispanic Fundraising Network probably deploys its resources in the same way that Emily's List and some of the groups that support women candidates will be focused on Texas. Again, those people don't vote in Texas.
Right.
So it's not enough to say, well, I raise money in D.C., Washington, Los Angeles, and that is determinative, but it does matter.
A big interesting business question here is whether the Texas Democrats can raise enough money to be competitive in these things.
Not just from the Mostyns.
Well, right? And not just from, you know, one or two people. Whenever you raise money from one or two people, you've got all of their, you know, all of their fleas, right? So Wendy Davis.
Not that you're suggesting the Mostyns have fleas.
All dogs have fleas. How's that?
Wendy Davis.
Jeff Rotkopf, call your office. Yeah.
Jeff Rotkopf definitely has fleas.
My God, double down.
Yeah, let's go
again,
for it.
Again, speaking of double down.
Let's go for it. Wendy Davis has already shown some ability to raise money around the country. So does Letitia Vandepute raise money from the same sources around the country or bring more sources to it? That's an interesting question.
Yeah.
But does that phenomenon also benefit the Republicans if they think that, you know, they are under a legitimate threat? I was at a local Republican, area Republican meeting in Clear Lake last night. I was interested in how seriously they were taking and talking about Battleground Texas. They were talking about it like it was, you know, the biggest threat.
Because
to
it's a fundraising
tool. They have to, for fundraising.
They raise
exactly.
money. And every time you hear Battleground Texas, they're thanking Jeremy Byrd and those guys for coming in because they've got something to fundraise against.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So it should be a very expensive, very exciting race is what we're –
It's going to cost a fortune.
I can't
wait. The governor's race is going to be a $40 to $50 million race after the primary. And the lieutenant governor's race, if Vandepute can raise serious money, is going to slipstream behind
enough.
That. Right.
Enough
money, right. Is probably another $12 million per candidate. The Democrats still haven't found an AG candidate. I guess they've got a couple rattling around. I don't really expect – a lot of money and Democratic races.
Do you think
Uresti
eventually pops up?
Uresti's looking
Carlos
at
Uresti
it.
Was named as a potential.
You know, I don't know. He's been sort of flirting around. I bet not, ultimately.
So who will it be?
Be that Sam Houston fellow.
Well, Sam Houston's already in. Mike Collier's in the
great
controller's
name.
Race, who in a normal competitive year, Collier looks like a pretty good controller candidate, just a straight up, you know, not, you know, looks qualified for the job.
In a year
looks
in
like
which
a,
the D next to your name is not a disqualifier.
If this was a purple state, that'd be a ordinarily competitive candidate.
But didn't people say the same thing about Jeff Weems in the Railroad Commission race last time?
Not to the same degree,
right.
I don't think.
So
right.
If you were a betting man, do any of these Ds get across the finish line?
No.
No.
Are you betting men?
Not in lieu of a precipitating event.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Of, you know, Greg Abbott or somebody doing a Todd Akin or an asteroid falls and hits all the Republicans.
One of the things the Democrats have stopped doing in Texas that you have to do is you have to have serious candidates all the time just in case.
Right.
You know,
another reason Vandepute matters.
And this is your in case.
You'll win in a year when you didn't necessarily expect to. The last guy in the world who was supposed to win in 1990 was Rick Perry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Clady Williams was supposed to win that year.
Problem is that the Rick Perry unlikely to win candidate for ag commissioner – this time is Kinky Friedman.
Right. Right. Well, and that's another place to go on this ticket. If you're looking at a full up and down ticket, the Republicans can point to certain individuals on the Democratic ticket.
They remain nameless but attempt to sell everything with a price tag attached and some things without it.
Name rhymes with Binky Tiedemann. And, you know, they got a clown car over there. And it's, you know, really, you're running that guy?
Binky Tiedemann sounds like a total clown name.
Binky Tiedemann's clown car.
Yeah.
It's a little side business Ross has going.
It does.
Let's move on to a topic where the conservatives appear to have lost for the time being, actually, over at the UT Austin campus. You're shaking your head, Emily. You want to explain what that was?
What's this thing you organized?
Yeah, right. Very good question. Ross. The University of Texas branch of the Young Conservatives of Texas, famously known, notoriously known maybe, for hosting an affirmative action bake sale earlier this fall that got a lot of attention.
Yeah, famously is a bit too strong.
Maybe. Yeah. I changed it
locally.
To notoriously.
Locally. In our world.
I don't know. It made a lot of headlines. It was on the Huffington Post. Some people read those things. Anyway, they decided that
it was in the Huffington Post bake sale vertical.
Right.
Exactly. You want to be the cupcake editor? Yeah. I can call her if you want.
Exactly. So they decided that they, on Wednesday of this week, were going to host a game called Catch an Illegal Immigrant, where they basically wanted to draw attention to illegal immigration by putting stickers on some volunteers, and basically if you found one of their volunteers, a quote-unquote illegal immigrant, and apprehended them, you would get a $25 gift card.
You were deported to Madam Mam's
right.
when you enjoyed some
yeah,
delicious
right.
lunch.
We exactly. should say that it's not an original idea. It's something that University of North Texas did in 2005, and I think UT tried to do and that was not successful then because of an outcry.
Yes, but right. if I were your mother, what I would say, if your friend jumps off a building, do you then do it?
So these
are you not my mother?
The fact that right. some days we've the fact that it's been done before is not
reason right. enough.
It's a data point, but it's not an excuse.
No, I'm just saying they're not original.
Right. That's so they were saying. They were not original.
Not only bad judgment, but
So it ended up the event ended up being canceled by the event organizer, I guess after sort of a large outcry and some concerns from the university that this was violating the school's ethics policy or honor code.
I think their concerns about Bill Powers being upset were trumped by their concerns that Greg Abbott and the Republican establishment
I think,
walked
yeah.
away
and that's
from.
Really
what was
the
your
background.
What was your role in organizing this? I read about it online.
Yeah,
what,
right.
This is a funny little flap.
The funny little flap is that I guess apparently if you work for a news organization and you tweet this news and it gets retweeted, suddenly the whole universe believes that you were the one organizing the event.
Hater.
Didn't Binky Tiedman or someone
I
come after
it.
You?
Right.
I knew it the whole
so,
time.
Binky Tiedman, yes, that's who it was.
Who was, right. it, who was it that attacked you?
A number of people attacked me on social media. and it was also retweeted by a gentleman by the name of Chingo Bling, who is, I think, a rap star.
You guys thought Binky Tiedman was
right. And so who
has... A gentleman named Chingo Bling.
Chingo Bling.
You sound like Mitt Romney. And what are you doing? It's the whitest podcast ever.
And suddenly Chingo Bling's many, many followers were very, very angry with me on
so
social media.
So we should clarify for Mr. Bling that you did not organize it.
I did not organize
it.
The event.
Reporting it.
I was just reporting it on it on behalf of Julian Aguilar, our reporter who wrote about the event. But there was some other interesting tidbits here in that this young man who organized this event, Lorenzo Garcia, I believe right. is his name, he, as recently as 6 or 8 weeks ago, was a paid campaign staffer for
Greg Abbott.
He was an
intern. Was he paid?
He was on the payroll.
Yeah.
He apparently parted ways with them because...
That's how I knew he wasn't an intern. He was paid.
Right. Right. He parted ways with them
inside
because
joke.
He had too much schoolwork to do.
Hashtag
apparently,
run away now.
Hashtag planning illegal immigrant mock raids.
No, so I mean, but how interesting is it that he used to work for the Abbott campaign? You know, the Democrats in the state quickly tried to tie this to Abbott.
It's an undeniable fact, but you can't really hang this around Abbott's neck. It's
right,
embarrassing
no, what,
at worst.
What's right. even more interesting is that since we wrote this story, we've had a bunch of people who know Lorenzo Garcia send us photos of him. These people are young Democrats,
right.
and they're sending us photos of Lorenzo Garcia at an Obama rally or some Obama event, you know, a couple
with
years
a face
ago,
decal,
with
right.
a big O face decal.
Oh, I didn't know about that. Really? Is
yeah.
That so?
So clearly, uh-huh. this young no. man is a little confused.
But that's one of the
he's
things.
Why can't kids be kids?
No, he's a. right. I mean, he's an undergraduate. That's why should this story have
right.
gotten?
He's an undergraduate. That really is the explanation for all of this.
No, but that is
it
right.
It is right. Yeah,
should this story be such a huge deal? I mean, it's like some 20-year-olds making a mistake. Right? Who are iffy
well,
on their,
well, it is,
their own
it
politics.
Is, it is 20-year-olds making a mistake, and I think we can accept. Okay. On the other hand, it is not 20-year-olds who are said now to have a political problem with Latinos. It is conservatives. And so the fact that he is the Young Conservatives of Texas as opposed to the physics club doing this, it becomes by virtue of the circumstances.
So Greg Abbott is in the position of the embarrassed parent saying, yes, that's one of my children.
Yeah.
Sorry,
no,
but
he's a lunkhead.
I mean, so you're 20 years old. Promoting a racist event is something that
I'm not excusing it, but I'm in fact with you. I think that actually it is relevant, but I think the reason it was relevant is especially because of the political circumstances
right.
outside that
Well, I think it's more relevant to the point that I think Joaquin Castro tried to make on Monday that, you know, it's not the first time we've seen something like this, right? We saw that girl that worked for Dewhurst a couple of years ago tweet something about shooting the president. And there is sort of, I mean, you do see this sort of trickle down rhetoric among sort of the young people that try to get involved in these movements that I think is somewhat telling, perhaps.
Well, there are definitely...
Well, I don't know if we need to vilify Lorenzo Garcia to the extent that he has been. I mean, he's certainly in the wrong.
We don't need to vilify him. Other people are doing that work for him.
Or I would argue he's done it for himself.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree.
I did think that there was a certain amount of hilarity in the statement they put out yesterday, as we sit here.
Abbott?
YCT. Saying that they were calling off the mock immigrant raid because they feared retaliation from the university, as if this were somehow a free speech issue.
Actually, the university, I thought, sort of went out of its way to say free speech here. Right. People can say whatever they want, but as far as our honor code is concerned, although Wayne Slater, the Dallas Morning News, wrote a column, posted last night, basically saying, you know, did the university go too far in trying to crush this event?
No, not at all. Because I actually thought the university came out pretty strongly on it. I mean, they said, you know, this could be an honor code violation, so be careful about doing it. But there's a big difference between speech and actions. And they were basically creating an environment. And there are undocumented students on campus. Right. And they're sanctioned to be there by Governor Rick Perry, who signed that law into effect in 2001. And so by creating an environment where you're encouraging people to hunt these people down is clearly a threatening action to people on campus, and that's a clear violation of the honor code, I think.
And the YCT guys knew what they were doing. Right. They didn't stumble into this controversy. They recorded it.
No, they just did the affirmative action.
So stand back for a minute. In their world, did this work?
Hugely. It was a huge win for them. I do.
They got incredible amounts of attention.
Who the hell was talking about them before?
No, but
You know what's funny is in the wake of this, most of the statewide officials, they've got a straw poll going, and most of the many of the Republican statewide candidates are now currently tweeting and saying, be sure to vote for us in the YCT poll.
Right.
That, you know, those they weren't
well,
worried
so
about.
Well, so you and I got a text from a consultant to a candidate running for statewide office against a field of candidates, one of whom received the YCT endorsement. This consultant's candidate did not.
Right.
And that consultant wrote to us in the midst of all this and said, you ought to go call the candidate who got the YCT endorsement and ask him, do you think this is a good thing now? You want that endorsement?
Right.
That's maybe overstating it a tiny bit. They're not going to renounce the endorsement on the basis of this.
They're going to keep the endorsement, and it's going to show up in one of their mailers later in the
year. You know it will, right?
Well, it depends on if you think that their goal was a secondary get attention for the group thing, right? Because their stated goal
is
to—
Either way, it works.
But I don't know if they really got the discussion about illegal immigration going that they really wanted. They're not really, I mean—
Well, not in the way they wanted to.
But do they really want a conversation about illegal immigration, or do they want attention?
That's what I'm saying. Their stated goal was a discussion about illegal immigration. And what they got was sort of an affirmation from many different camps of sort of, this is not the way you have a discussion about illegal immigration.
Mm-hmm.
I did think it was funny that the only thing they actually apologized for, said that they were in the wrong about, was offering gift cards. Which I didn't really think anybody...
No one does gift cards anymore. That's true.
Right.
I'm really sorry that these gift cards are from Walmart
They're the worst Christmas
Central Market
givers.
Yeah.
You know?
It's impersonal.
Yeah. But they really were not apologetic at all. I mean, they just...
Listen, there are a whole bunch of former YCT chairs running around this political environment in Austin, running around this election cycle. And I suspect that they are kind of going, move on.
Right.
They'd like to see this subject.
Next.
It's an organization that they did care about and did lead. They'd just like to see the whole thing move on. That is my strong suspicion.
But without apologizing for it, I got to go back to, you know, they're 20-year-olds. They're going to make judgment mistakes. The YCT and groups like this are going to continue to show up and make headlines for us.
Shingo Bling is going to be up your ass over that statement. Boy, oh boy.
No, I had to watch all his YouTube videos last night because I had no idea who he was.
Did he make you do that?
Are you a fan? Are you a fan girl now?
You start talking about hunting varmints like Mitt Romney now. You are the Mitt Romney of this podcast.
Just to be clear, none of you knew who Shingo Bling was either.
Evan sent me a link to his video like 2 months ago. It's great.
I did not know who
Chingo Bling is. I have children who occasionally listen to the hip hop.
The hip hop. He used to be the editor of this publication that had an arts section.
I knew my Bun B from my
Jingle bling. Can you name a third?
Energy department. DJ Screw. I published a DJ Screw story in my day.
All right, let's not.
The good news is I suddenly have...
Get into Evan's nostalgia.
Sometimes this podcast sounds like we've all taken cough syrup, so that's actually true.
The good news is I now have all kinds of interesting Twitter followers.
You do?
Yes.
Is that right? Great.
Well, in celebration of that, if anyone would like to know how to follow Emily Ramshaw on Twitter, you can email tribcast@texastribune.org and we'll give you instructions. In the meantime, we'd like to thank Shiny Ribs for doing our music.
Not hip hop.
Correct. All right, you get the gift card.
Oh, great. Good. I need things at Walmart.
All right. On behalf of Ross, Emily, Evan, and our producer Todd, this is Reeve. Thanks for listening.
Letitia Vanderpool.
And the Young Conservatives.
Yeah. Right. That's our new children's book series.